Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last week, state officials revealed that the emerald ash borer beetle had officially been found in Vermont. This is not a surprise. It was more a matter of when than if. Still, state entomologist Judy Rosofsky says it's like looking for the monster under your bed and finding it. This invasive bug has been devastating to ash trees in more than 30 states, and there are no proven large-scale means of treating for it. So, is there anything that can be done? And what should communities and landowners do with ash trees now? Cut them all down? Wait for them to be infested and die? Try a treatment? Today on the show, we're going to see if we can get some answers and a better understanding of this small but mighty insect. Judy Rosofsky is the state entomologist, and she's here in the studio with me today. Judy, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Barbara Schultz, the state's Forest Health Program Manager. Barbara, nice to have you with us.
Yes, thank you as well.
How was this ash borer infestation in Orange first discovered? Barbara?
Well, we heard a report from a consulting forester who was working in the area. He was aware of the symptoms of emerald ash borer, what it does to ash trees, and noticed it on the trees he was working in. And he reported it to our website designed just for that purpose. The VT Invasives website has a report it facility so that if people think they may have seen something of concern on that website, there are photos posted where people can look at the forest pest problem and see if it looks like what they're seeing. And if they're still concerned, press a button and report the pest, and some photos were submitted that indeed look just like emerald ash borer.
But it's a federal designation, right? So you have to have somebody from the federal government come and confirm an infestation. So, Judy, even if you were saying, yep, that's emerald ash borer, you had to wait until somebody from the federal government could come and say, yep, you're right.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yes, this is a federally regulated pest. And so what we did was we collected a sample and we sent it to a recognized identifier who confirmed that this was indeed the emerald ash borer. And you can certainly understand why they would want to do it that way.
But it had likely been there for a few years already?
It seems from the, we're seeing trees with the bark coming off of them that it has to have been there for 3 to 4 years at least.
How far has it spread?
Well, we don't know that yet. And one of our first steps will be to do a delimiting survey to determine the extent of the infestation.
Based on just observations, by eye, how many trees can you see right in that area that are affected?
It's a heavily wooded area, so I'd hesitate to give a number. And we haven't really extensively surveyed the area. I mean, at this point, we know we have it, and we're just trying to organize ourselves to go out and determine the extent of the infestation and the location, and then go from there.
But more than one tree. It's not like you found it on one piece of firewood that somebody had suddenly left by, at the base of a tree.
Unfortunately, no.
So, Barbara, is it pretty much a guarantee that it's already elsewhere in Vermont if it's already been found and has been in Orange for likely 3 or more years?
Well, as you mentioned, it wasn't a surprise to find it, discouraging but not a surprise. It's close to Vermont in other parts of the state. But I think Vermonters have been really careful about not moving firewood around, not moving infested ash into the state. And so I think we can only manage it and deal with it where we know it occurs. So I think right at the moment, we're focusing on that part of the state where we have indeed confirmed the insect.
And it was a surprise to you, though, that this is where it was found, Barbara?
It wasn't where we expected it. We've been working with what we call risk maps based on where there's a lot of ash in the state, but also where there's a higher likelihood that people will be traveling through the state or might be bringing firewood to the state. And this certainly was not one of the areas we had flagged as the most likely to be the first place we'd find emerald ash borer.
And we got a note from Roy who says, honestly, this probably came from firewood as it is in a relatively remote place without much industry. And Roy's talking about this orange infestation. And yes, firewood is a major vector for it and is part of the reason we have the firewood ban to begin with. Also, firewood does travel by the interstate, and thus this could have come from someone out of state who did not know of the ban. Judy Rosofsky, is that your hunch that this initially came here from firewood?
Again, we're not entirely sure of the extent of this infestation, but it's a heavily wooded area. And it seems like if you lived in a heavily wooded area, you wouldn't have a need to bring firewood
from
up
out
there.
Of state.
Although you never know, it's more convenient to have it cut up for you. So we really don't know what the source was yet. And maybe once we've done some more delineation surveys, we'll be able to figure out at least possibly the starting point. We may never know how it got into that area.
And Roy mentions the firewood ban. And the firewood ban is you're not supposed to bring firewood from other states into Vermont currently.
Yes. And we'd also prefer that people not move it over a certain number of miles, over 50 miles. And, you know, and even with the discovery of the emerald ash borer here, it's still important not to move firewood. It is a great method for transporting invasive insects, invasive diseases. So if you can just leave your firewood where it came from, we'd all be better off.
Because the emerald ash borer itself is not exactly a fast mover.
They can fly some, but, you know, we're looking at a county that is not abutting any other known infestations. So it seems quite likely it had a motorized transport to get there.
Barbara Schultz, are we likely to see a firewood ban now for exporting Vermont firewood or other kinds of Vermont wood? I mean, any ash?
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, our neighboring states, most of them already have firewood quarantines. And this isn't only to protect against emerald ash borer, which we've all accepted that we were going to have sooner or later, but also for the pests that we don't know about yet. That's really critical just not to be moving them before we even know they exist. So many of our neighboring states already have firewood quarantines in effect. We do expect to see this particular insect, the emerald ash borer, is federally regulated. And at this point, there probably will be some regulations that come into play. But that will depend a lot on the delineation survey.
Can you talk a little bit and explain, Barbara, how devastating this insect is and how it actually kills ash trees?
Sure. Yeah. This insect is a tree killer. It spends most of its life underneath the bark where we can't see it. That's why it's so hard to detect. That's why it usually takes several years for a new infestation to be found. It's in the grub stage that it does its damage. It feeds between the bark and the wood. And that's that very critical part of the tree where the nutrients travel from the roots to the stem and back down again. So that's how a tree gets girdled. And over a short period of time, say 3 to 5 years after it's first infested, an individual tree will die. So and ash is an important tree to the state of Vermont. It's 5% of our ash trees, 5% of our sawlogs, of our sawlog volume in the state of Vermont is ash. And it's been widely planted in municipalities. Green ash is a very rugged street tree and has been planted.
And in terms of how effective ash borers are in actually damaging ash populations, I mean, they really decimate the populations, right? It's like 1% in places that have seen heavy infestation of ash trees that actually survive.
That's correct. It is a tree killer. But I would like to highlight that 1%. 1% sounds like a very small number, but we're talking about millions and millions of trees, and I think that's our ray of sunshine, if there is one, relative to emerald ash borer. What is that 1%? Why are they surviving? There's some research going into it now, trying to look at the potential for genetic resistance, trying to look at perhaps breeding trees for resistance. And I think it's our next generation that we really need to look to and think about when we're dealing with emerald ash borer. Instead of rushing in and cutting every single ash tree, giving it some time. If you're close to where this detection is, it's time to really think about how you're going to deal with ash if you have forest land. But further away, letting some trees grow, and particularly letting the young trees grow. Those are the ones that are the future. So producing, letting some trees exist in the forest stand so that they can produce seeds for the next generation.
I like this. Barbara Schultz, the state's forest health program manager, all on her own, rehabilitating the term, the 1%. This is pretty good. Judy Rosowski, when I think about the emerald ash borer, when I think about what it does, it sounds terrible. But when I look at a picture of the emerald ash borer, it is beautiful. I mean, I love the bug when I look at it. I'm not anthropomorphizing the emerald ash borer, but trying to interrogate my own feelings about this bug. And as state entomologist, do you look at it and have feelings at all?
Yeah, I look at it and have the bad news feeling. Yeah. It is a very beautiful insect. It has there are other species in that genus which are also quite lovely, so you can pick another one to appreciate.
Okay, all right, I will. So tell us a little bit about this insect and its life cycle.
So this insect tends to emerge in sorry, I'm just trying to read my notes. You'd think I would have this memorized, but I'm a little nervous. So they emerged, I think, in mid-June and July. And nope, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Okay, try that again. Reset. So they emerge in late May, and they peak in June. But they will emerge throughout the summer. And about a week or so after emergence, they'll mate. And then they'll start laying eggs. They're not the most prolific egg layer amongst insects, so that is another little piece of good news. But they certainly lay enough to be prolific. And then, you know, the adults don't live that long. The females live about 2 months. The males live about a month. And then the larvae will hatch from the eggs, get into the tree, and start messing with the tree's circulatory system.
And it's really the larva we're worried about. That's the part, the life stage where the ash borer does the damage.
That's correct. They're making little larval feeding galleries in the xylem and phloem where the fluids are going up and down, and that disrupts the tree's ability to transport fluids and nutrients. And eventually it will girdle the tree. They'll go all around the circumference of the tree, and that will prevent any circulation, and that's what ends up killing the trees.
Do we know where the ash borer originated? I mean, it's not native to Vermont or to any of the areas where we've seen this infestation. Where did it come from?
So it comes from Asia, and it was probably transported in pallets transporting goods to this country. It was first detected in Michigan and Ontario. And I have to say that Michigan made a valiant effort to eradicate this pest, and they cut down every host tree, every ash tree within half a mile of any infested tree. So they took out millions of trees and shipped them. And we all owe them a debt of gratitude for that, for trying to slow the spread and trying to eradicate the insect. But it really, you know, one of the problems is that you can't detect that a tree is infested until it's those larvae have been there for a while and the insect has been there for a while. And so it's difficult to get it early enough to stop it. So that's part of the problem. So we realize now that eradication is not going to be effective.
Yeah, why not? I mean, Barbara, maybe you can chime in here too. Why not just cut all our ash if it's going to happen anyway? I know you said the 1%, but, you know, if people are own land, or if it's a community and you're looking at your sidewalks and ash trees and the potential for damage, you know, we did get a note from Sprung 51 who says, run, don't walk to get your viable ash harvested now. In less than 4 years, we will have so many dead trees, no one will even want it for firewood. If you are a tree removal service, you are about to become in very high demand. If you have ash trees near your home or driveway, make plans to get them taken down. Once they get infected, they're nearly impossible to save. So, Barbara, why not? I mean, why not at least salvage what you can if you manage a forest or if you're a landowner with ash?
Sure. Well, I think it's a question of not panicking. People that are like at near where the infestation was detected have to do something and have to act now to preserve the value of their ash. But on the other hand, emerald ash borer has been at Vermont's doorstep for 10 years and hasn't killed an ash tree yet. So there's a lot of people in Vermont that won't see emerald ash borer for a long time now.
Like what? Long time being years or decades?
We could be talking decades. We've already had one decade given to us. And it depends on how careful people are about not moving infested material. But it doesn't kill every ash tree the moment it enters the state. And if the ash trees are allowed to grow, they have the ability to produce new wood. And if people are growing saw logs, that's very valuable. So it's worthwhile taking a measured look at it and seeing what's right for your woodlot.
And when you say people who are near an infestation that has been declared, and right now the only one that has been officially declared in Vermont is the one in Orange, but if you're near it, you should take some steps. So what's the range for being near it, and are you know, should those people cut their ash?
Certainly within 10 miles, trees are at risk of dying within the next 10 years. And So those are people that certainly should be paying attention to what they want to do with their lands. We do want to remind landowners whose land is in the current use program that they do need to follow their management plan. And if they would like to have that revised, then they have to work – they should be working with their consulting forester to have that management plan revised. But it is time, if you're within 10 miles of the current infestation that we know about, to reevaluate what you're doing with ash and perhaps salvage if that's your that fits in with your management objectives.
Today we're getting some information about what comes next now that the emerald ash borer has officially been found in Vermont. We're talking with state entomologist Judy Rosofsky and the state forest health program manager Barbara Schultz. Today we've been getting notes from people who want to talk about potential treatment methods for emerald ash borer, and perhaps not surprisingly, we've been hearing from PR firms who have been sending us information on various ones. We heard about one called ArborJet, which has two treatment methods called TreeAge and TreeIV system for high-volume dosages of the QuickJet micro-injector, it says. And then we got a note from Caroline, who's also from another firm, that says there are effective solutions out there that have seen great success in fighting EAB infestations. Research recommends the EAB treatments be applied early, before extensive disruption to the vascular tissues of the tree occurs. Such treatments available include those from a company called ArborJet, which uses a TreeIV system. That's the one I mentioned. And let's go to Bear, who's calling in from Peterson, Massachusetts. Hi, Bear. Go right
Hello
ahead.
There.
Hi.
Hi. I'm just calling in. I just wanted to thank both Barbara and Judy for educating the public about EAB. EAB is a very fast killer, and I do want to let people know that there are other treatments available besides ArborJet and some of the other products that are out there in the market. There are OMRI-listed products such as TreeAzin that you can use that are environmentally sensitive that offer two-year control. So I just wanted, again, to say thank you. I know a lot of people are going to panic and try to sort of promote tips for people to cut all of their trees down, but they don't need to do. So if they do want to treat them, if they're within the 15-mile radius, that they can prophylactically treat them before it gets there, if they have historic or high-value stands they want to protect.
Bear, thanks for your comments. Appreciate that. Barbara Schultz, what about treatment? What about, you know, insecticides or other ways of prophylactically treating trees? I mean, what's been found to be effective?
So, yes, there are insecticide treatments that will preserve trees. It will not save trees that are heavily infested already. The trees have to be treated before they have a serious decline. And the insecticide treatments aren't good forever. They're something that has to be repeated. They're usually good, as it was mentioned, for 2, 3, 4 years. So there's something that has to be repeated. A couple situations where people might want to consider that option, as was mentioned, first of all, EAB, there's no point in treating your trees if EAB is not close. It doesn't last in the tree forever, and so you want to wait until your trees are actually somewhat threatened by being close to where we know there's EAB. The second thing, it's not something you'd consider in the forest situation. Two situations where it may turn out to be the right answer for somebody. A particularly high-value ash that a person is willing to treat every few years in perpetuity, or at least until a replacement is well established, that would be one reason that people might want to consider that. Another is some municipalities have found that as emerald ash borer moves into the area, their cost of tree removals is quite high, and by treating some of the trees, they can stagger the rate of ash tree mortality, and therefore their effort at removing trees and preventing them from becoming hazardous trees. And some municipalities have used that tool to sort of stagger their tree removal efforts.
Why, if we really care about preserving ash trees and if we wanted to eradicate the emerald ash borer, why wouldn't we look at blanket insecticide treatment for all our ash trees?
Well, as you know, insecticides have downsides as well as upsides, and I think it would be quite an undertaking even to try it. But the economic cost, the environmental cost, I think we people have found that it's more reasonable to pick and choose those trees that are really valuable. Another situation I know that in some states they have been preserving some trees so that those trees will be left to preserve to produce seeds for the next generation. So particularly desirable trees to treat them so that they produce seeds is another reason that governments and other individuals have treated trees.
Judy Rusofsky, could we see in the future something along the lines of the way we do spraying for mosquitoes in our mosquito control districts where, you know, you could sort of do an aerial spray and blanket the state and try to – I mean, are there people thinking about ways to save ash trees like that?
We're certainly trying to think of ways to save ash trees, but, you know, one of the problems with a boring beetle – is that it goes under the bark and
yes, boring as in what they do, not you're not talking judgmentally.
Right, that's
here.
Right. No, I didn't mean to say they're lacking in interest. I think we're all very interested in them at the moment. Yes, I simply meant they bore into the tree and go under the bark, and they're not accessible to your typical aerial spray. Even though the adults come out and feed, that's not the life stage where a treatment would be most effective.
And you couldn't, because they lay their eggs under the bark, you couldn't kill off all the adults a couple years in a row. And I mean, you know what I mean? Like, people must be thinking about ways to eradicate, because we could see the demise of all our ash trees, notwithstanding that 1% that are surviving. You know, if we can't come up with a plan to help respread them, could we be looking at no more ash?
I don't think it's that dire. We've had some experience with these devastating diseases and insects that attack trees, with the American chestnut, for example, and the elm. So we certainly see elm in the landscape, many of which are dying, but some are still healthy. And so I think we'll see a similar situation.
I don't think of elm as a good news story on the front for how to deal with invasive pests.
They're not gone from the landscape, though. They're still reproducing, and it's true they tend to die young, but I still see large, healthy elms. So, you know, we do want to retain enough live, natural individuals to maintain that seed stock and to try to determine how they've managed to survive the infestations. As Barb mentioned, those survivors can be very helpful to us as scientists. So, you know, and we've had a lot of experience with different insects. You know, we're certainly focusing a lot of attention on this one.
And because, I mean, the problem here is that these invasive insects came here and they were able to reproduce quickly and hit trees that had no natural defenses. But if we look at other places where these insects are native and there is a balance in the population, over time, those trees have been able to create defenses. And so you see a population that can sustain these beetles and the trees. So that's what we're eventually hoping to get to here, right?
Ultimately, if that's possible. I mean, we certainly haven't seen that with the American chestnut, and I don't mean to be a bad news bear here. But there are still naturally occurring chestnut out there. They don't necessarily, they're not proliferating. And we have organizations devoted to trying to maintain that species and to try to ultimately restore them. But it takes a while. Even the, you know, something like the Liberty Elm, which is a hybrid. So you have to find things that work. And that's what we're doing. And, you know, we're fortunate that we have these allies in the Forest Service and in the APHIS, the other federal agency that addresses invasive insects. They have a lot of resources that they pour into trying to come up with solutions that are practical for the given biology of this pest.
Or butternut, for example. We've had UVM researchers who have been working on trying to deal with grafting butternut so that they can find trees that can reproduce and sustain and withstand butternut canker. Let's go to Ben, who's calling in from Bradford. Hi, Ben. Go right ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm an arborist, and I'm also I went to Paul Smith's College in the Adirondacks in the early 2000s, and that was when, you know, the emerald ash borer, the Asian longhorn beetle all came in, and you know, we've known about these things for almost 15 years, and you know, you still have experts who are saying, don't cut these trees. You know, don't do a widespread eradication of it. And it's already swept across 20 states and a good part of Canada. And Vermont was this isolated little pocket. And we were so blessed to be isolated. But the lack of proactive, you know, proactive leadership in terms of saying, hey, let's harvest this wood. Let's protect our specimen ash trees. We're way too late. You know, we're not going to be able to cut all of these trees at this point. We're not going to be able to preserve them, in my opinion. I think it saddens me to see it happen as a professional and as a lover of trees. But I'm just curious, like, this plan of attack that's just been launched in Vermont, you know, this week, why wasn't this developed a long time ago? It's very discouraging to me.
Ben, I appreciate your call. Thank you. And as an update, it's more than 30 states have seen emerald ash borer now. But Barbara Schultz, to Ben's point, you know, it seems like a late start to be coming up with a plan now since we knew it was coming.
Yeah, sure. Well, we thought we'd be the first, quote unquote, kid on the block when emerald ash borer was first detected in Montreal, because we thought we'd be the first state in the Northeast to get it. And since that time, we have actually been developing action plans. We've had material out for landowners and how they should be addressing their ash resource, suggestions for reducing their vulnerability by making sure their concentration of ash was below 20%, really throughout the state. The Urban and Community Forestry Program has been working with municipalities to develop emerald ash borer action plans, and a number of municipalities have those in place. We've been working with the solid waste folks on developing wood disposal approaches, so because one of the real issues in municipalities is dealing with the waste wood. So there are actually a number of plans in place, but the bottom line is that it took an infestation to pull the trigger. It was impossible to say where this insect was going to show up first, and we're ready now to implement. Our resources are now in place to do what we have planned to do. Focus now on Orange County.
Is Ben right, though, that had we been more proactive, we might have been able to preserve or protect trees that we now won't be able to?
Well, one thing that is I guess on our side is there is, as Judy mentioned, there's quite a bit of research going on. There's a big research effort about resistance, and there's also a big research effort devoted to biocontrols, and biocontrols have been introduced into quite a few states. So because we didn't find the insect in 2008, but rather 2018, we now have an opportunity to be on the early side for getting these insects into Vermont as soon as we had a host material for them to move into. So every year that we didn't have emerald ash borer was a year that science could sort of catch up with this insect. 16 years isn't a very long time to know about a particular insect. There was a lot to learn, and we started with knowing nothing. So we've benefited from that, and we have ash trees now that have had a chance to grow 10 more years. Yes, a lot of trees are going to die as emerald ash borer moves through the state, and it will take time for that to happen. But unfortunately, we will see a lot of ash trees die.
Don't we have to worry about the consequences, the unknowns of a biocontrol? I mean, you have only to look at places where certain animals have been introduced to solve one problem that have then caused a whole other one.
That the biocontrol is certainly an issue that requires people to be very serious about looking at possible consequences. Of course, there's always a risk, but I will say people have learned an awful lot by some of the mistakes that have been made. The biocontrols that are imported are pretty carefully vetted, particularly for having a very narrow host range that they really will only infest a very targeted insect. And I have to say for the state of Vermont, now that we're number 32, we're kind of late to this party, so that any biocontrols that we might release here in Vermont have already been widely released elsewhere. And I will say that the research on those places where these insect parasitoids have been released is promising. It shows that these natural enemies have been reducing the populations of emerald ash borer where they have been released. So there's a little ray of optimism, maybe not for the big trees now that are going to be faced with massive populations of emerald ash borer, but maybe that next generation of trees that are growing up once these parasitoids are established that won't be facing as many emerald ash borers as they try to grow into big trees. To me, that's the ray of hope we're looking for.
Let's go to Kevin, who's calling in from Panton. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hi. I understand there's a prohibition on the transfer of firewood, but I live on 22A, and tractor-trailer trucks come through here all day long, 7 days a week, with log loads on them, and all heading north. I presume they're going to Canada, to the sawmills. And I guess my question is, how do you get a permit to truck logs through the state, and maybe that's how they got here, just jumping off trucks. Thank you.
Barbara, yeah, and moving forward, are we likely to see more prohibitions on moving wood of all kind or ash wood of different stripes around?
So, yes, thank you for clarifying about the ash wood. It's really emerald ash borer only attacks ash trees. So, and that's the good news because there's a lot of species that we have in Vermont that won't be affected. But it's also why the quarantine only regulates ash, not other logs that may be moving through the state. The quarantine does not allow the movement of logs through an uninfested area during what is the flight season. Judy referred to when the beetles are active, and the flight season doesn't begin until long after May 1st, which is when the official season starts, and is over by October 1st. So between October 1st and May 1st, it's possible to ship logs as long as they're going to a destination where the facility has a compliance agreement that guarantees that they will saw these logs before the flight season begins again. So under controlled conditions that reduce the risk of transporting the insect and allowing it to move to new areas, people can transport saw logs through uninfested areas. And I want to emphasize that point because some people are under the impression that once the insect moves in that they won't be able to sell saw logs. And that's not the case. There will be likely restrictions on some areas. And as I said, we don't know exactly what they'll look like. But there will be the ability to transport and ship saw logs as long as it's done in according to the compliance agreements that ensure or that give us a good assurance that the insect will not be spread.
Judy, just before we let you go, and there have been people who are saying, I've seen emerald ash borer here or I've seen it here. And we've heard that for years, but especially now with this increased or heightened awareness of it, people are wanting to call in and see. What should people who think they may have seen emerald ash borer do and where can they call?
Well, Barb mentioned the VermontInvasives.org, and that's a website specifically designed to handle this kind of call. It gives us a record. You can post images. And then once we know you think you have something, we will send somebody out to check it out.
That's Judy Rosofsky, state entomologist. Barbara Schultz is the state's Forest Health Program Manager. Thanks very much to both of you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.